This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado.
This is The Gauge, and I am host Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got 2017 world champion barrel racer Nelly Miller. Guys, I swear to God, The Gauge is not a barrel racing show. It's everything. It's just we were able to get a lot of barrel racers. Nelly is so down to earth. She's a great mother, amazing competitor. You know, she is a world champion. She's done a lot of great things, and we can't wait to see her back. And we had a lot of fun talking about California and all the stuff that goes on there. So I think you guys will really like this episode. Check it out.
You guys left, well, in what part of California? Is it Cottonwood?
I'm Cottonwood,
Cottonwood,
yeah.
Cottonwood, yeah. And you're born and raised, grew up there your whole life?
Yeah. We're like 2 hours from the Oregon border, so we're pretty far north.
Oh, you're way north.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're in a very interesting place as far as Western people go, because there just can't be that many of them out there, huh?
Where we're at, it's rural.
Yeah.
I mean, it's country living. I think most people say California and they're like LA, San Francisco, but it's not like that. Where in a lot of California is like that. A lot of California is just, you know, good kind of ranch people, cowboy people, a lot of that. So
yeah, you're just completely controlled by this tiny little segment of like, what is it, like 4 million, 5 million people in LA. It's it might be more than that, but
well, there's 40 million in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many LA, between LA and San Francisco, it's the majority of
huge amount. Yeah. And you just have all these people in a tiny spot controlling everybody else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so what, since you grew up there, I mean, what has it been like when you were a kid versus now, like as far as the landscape of California, has it changed a lot? Is it a lot of the same? I mean, probably not in your area, but if you're from California, you're pretty aware of.
Yeah, I would say it's changed like dramatically in the last several years, but maybe that's just because I'm more aware, you know, growing up and you're just a kid. So it's like, you don't really pay much attention to the whole politics of anything, but California is, it's a really great state. Like I love being from California. I love my state, but we have such a bad reputation when it comes to politics and just, you know, I don't know. People have a different view of California than what I have, but there's a lot to offer in California. So I always defend it.
Well, I mean, if you've ever been, like, even if you're in those metropolitan areas, it's like the most beautiful place ever.
Yeah.
You know, some like, weird people, but it's gorgeous.
And there's like so much to offer. I mean, you could go skiing or you could go to the beach an hour away. I mean, it's just, there's everything there. There's so much agriculture. I mean, you drive through the valleys and it's just agriculture. I mean, so it's just huge, but it's not what we're known for. We're known for our cities and our Hollywood and, you know, so, but there's just so much more to it than that.
Yeah. And so you growing up there, like, because I don't personally know your background. I mean, what did your folks do? What did you guys do as you were growing up and in that area?
Well, so my dad, he's always had horses. Like as a kid, he always just wanted to be a cowboy. And so like his dad gave him horses and got him into it and everything. But my grandpa, my dad, my uncle, my brother, they were all building contractors. Like that's how they made their living. And so my dad built homes. He was a contractor all growing up. That's how he made his living. And then he just cowboyed on the weekends. I mean, that was his calling. Like he's really good with horses. He's always had young horses, always training horses. So that's what he wanted to be doing.
But had to have a job to fund it.
he had to support his family. So yeah, that's what he did. And he's good at it. And we're a family of builders. Like that's just what they kind of grew up knowing and knew how to do. And so it was a good kind of balance, really, because we had that support. I mean, he made a good living. We had, my mom worked, she's a county superintendent for schools. So she was in the education side of things. And we just had a really good upbringing, pretty solid, like, middle class family. So
in California, I mean, middle class, that's a stretch, right? Yeah. It's got to be so hard. I mean, because you can't define middle class in a place like California.
No, and it's gotten farther away from the middle class the last, you know, I don't know how many years, but it's gotten farther and farther away. You know, when I was a kid, I think there is more middle class than what there is now.
Right.
But yeah, it was just, we had a great childhood.
Of course, you rodeoed, and I think you did like every event you could when you were growing up, right?
Yeah. So my dad was a team roper. That's what he did. And later on, he decided he wanted to trip steer. So he did that for a while. And my brother roped. And so that's kind of what we grew up knowing. And I didn't really get into barrel racing until I was like 12 or 13 years old. So I wasn't like this kid that was always barrel racing. You know, I wasn't the tiny girl on the big horse running or anything. I didn't really get into it until I was older. And so when I finally got that horse that gave me the confidence to ride, my dad just kind of took it on and figured out how to barrel race so that he could help me.
So your dad was kind of like the driving force in getting you, you know, to the point where you even wanted to rodeo and do all that. I mean, he was kind of the architect of most of that.
Yeah. Like my mom, her family rodeoed growing up too. So it's kind of just what they both did, you know, as families and growing up. But I wasn't that gung ho about riding. I was real cautious. I was kind of just timid for no reason. Like I didn't get in any bad wrecks. Like, you know, I wasn't on out of control horses. I had great horses, but I was just very cautious. I wasn't like that aggressive kid. And so, it took that special horse, I think. And then I started winning and got fun then, 'cause you were winning and doing good. And, that's kind of when I took off. But yeah, my dad, he's always had good horses for us, and he's always, like, he's good at figuring things out. I mean, when I decided to barrel race, he was all in on it, on figuring out how to do it. And he had always rode young horses, so the way he rode the young horses really fit a barrel racing horse good, because he would train them around a barrel, you know, just to get them broke. So all of our rope horses knew how to turn a barrel just from his foundation that he always did on them.
All right. So he was really passionate about starting young horses.
He loves young horses. Like even now he's getting up in age and he would rather ride a young horse than an old broke one. So that's, you know.
Yeah. He's the definite minority.
Yeah.
Because I know that's the only way I knew how to make money until I was like 20 years old was riding colts.
Yeah.
You're not going to get me to ride colts ever again for money or even for passion. So I shout out to your dad, because that is a very select group of men and women. And without those people starting those horses, I mean, somebody started your great horse sister or any great horse. And there's just not a lot of them out there who can put the right foundation. So
yeah, he definitely, that's his calling. He's good at it and he likes it. And so it really fit me well, because I always had those horses to ride after him. And they were mostly the same sort of foundation that I grew up knowing how to ride. So it was really, you know, the pieces just kind of fell together for us.
So, and when you're in a place like Northern California like that, I mean, how much access, I know now, but back then, was there to like get to go to rodeos and stuff? Just because I'm just not overly familiar with, you know, what the rodeos were like there or are like in anything but the, you know, pro rodeos.
Well, it's definitely not Texas. Right. I mean, you come down here and there's just as much as you want, rodeo, jackpot, whatever. But there's a lot of jackpots to go to. We still have a great little barrel racing association. It's in Northern California. And I mean, you don't have to drive super far to get to any of them. So I grew up doing that. And actually kind of where I got going was amateur rodeos. The amateur rodeos are pretty strong in Northern California. and not as strong in Southern California. So they were closer for us to go to. And as I think I was 13 when I started going to amateur rodeos, 12 or 13, and just kind of took off. So I rodeoed more than I ever probably jackpotted. And I amateur rodeoed before I high school rodeoed. And so that's just what I grew up knowing was rodeos.
Totally. I mean, that's how myself and my sisters grew up. We had really good, you know, really good amateur rodeo circuit in Colorado that, well, we didn't want a high school rodeo because you win so much more money.
Yeah.
You know, it's like my sister Paige bought her first car off of one summer of rodeoing. And you can't even pay your entry fees to go to high school rodeos, you know. So it's interesting. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I just feel like I got so much out of that and set me up to have success in high school. You know, I think a lot of, which I didn't have the junior high when I was doing it, so it's just high school rodeo for me. But I feel like I was already used to that pressure of a rodeo, so high school rodeo was not, you know, anything new for me. So I really took off in high school and did well, and I just really progressed, you know, step by step.
I guess everybody has a mildly similar start, right? Everybody's like, well, I started here rodeoing, and then, you know, for you, what was kind of the point where you're like, man, I think I can go all the way with this?
You know, the horse I rode in the when I started was sister's mom. Well, sister and Blue Duck, the horse I made the NFR on the first time. So their mother was the horse I got that really got me started. She was, you know, the horse that gave me that confidence to go and do it, and she just was a great horse. We did every event on her. My brother roped calves, and we'd come back and switch saddles, and I would go barrel race on her and did every event in high school rodeo on her. And so she was a great horse, but I think as a family, we knew she didn't quite have the speed to go on and be a professional horse. And so about my senior year in high school, like, we were needing to make that transition to a better horse. And we had Blue Duck because he was probably 9 years old at that point. And he could dang sure run. He was a handful otherwise. And so my dad's like, well, we have a faster horse, but, you know, you're going to have to twist him to get it done. And so I kind of got grafted onto Blue Duck, and he loved barrel racing. So that was his calling as a horse. And that's kind of when I thought, oh, this is the horse I could do it on.
Rookie year when you were on your permit, what was that like, you know, going from where you were from? And I mean, aside from the Northwest rodeos, I mean, you are spending a lot of time in the truck.
Yeah, so I went to college for a couple of years, and that's really where I seasoned that horse and got him kind of rodeo ready, which was really good for him and me too. I loved college rodeo. It was so much fun. And so I was trying to go to a few rodeos as much as I could along with college, and that just was not working. It's, you know, trying to be gone and make your classes, and it was terrible. And so that summer I had been to some circuit rodeos and whatnot and did well, and then I took off for the 4th of July my rookie year, and I had done good in the spring because all the spring rodeos were in California at that time, so they were easy for me to make. And so when I took off for the 4th of July, he got in an accident in the trailer, and we were out the rest of the year, but that kind of set us back as far as my rookie year goes. And then the next year was kind of like catching up and getting him healed back up. So we didn't make the finals until 2010, and he got hurt in 2008. So it took us like 2 years after he got hurt to get there.
Right. But. And so 2010 was your first finals, and, you know, coming from where you've come from and all that, what was it, you know, when was the point where you knew you had made the finals, like, as far as the year goes?
So 2010, like, I had it made probably, like, I knew for sure I was in at Salinas. So, like, after July, we kind of just cruised and you know, we went to some rodeos in the Northwest, but we didn't really go like as hard as you could have, just because we knew we hadn't made it that point. Which is, you know, it's just funny, like when looking back on those years, like your really good years. I mean, it's just like the pieces fall together and everything works and everything's meshing well. And when they're not, there's like nothing you can do to fix it. But when it's going well, there's nothing you can do to stop it. And that's kind of how that year was for us.
And so when you get to Thomas and Mac for the first time, I mean, I know it's like trying to recount things on right on the spot, but it's so interesting because everybody has a different answer to that question. Like what were you feeling? I mean, what, when you were getting ready to go to your first run, were you like about to pass out? Were you just ready to roll?
No, I didn't have very many nerves. Like I felt really ready, and my horse was older. Like he was 15 when we made the finals. So I had a lot of confidence in that horse because he'd been there, done that. Like I felt like he was solid, not going to do anything dumb. And, so I had a lot of confidence going into that first round, just thinking, you know, this is going to be good. Like it's what I wanted. This, we're here, we right. made, you know? And so in the first round was great. Like we won second and I just thought, oh my God, this is going to be the best week ever. And it just went south fast. So it's, and to me, that's just Vegas. Like you never know. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen there.
I mean, it's just, it's such a weird place, but, I mean, you've been to the NFR now, what is it? Five times?
Four times.
Four times. Yep. Yeah. And I know there was a small break there, right?
Yeah. About 6 years.
Yeah.
In between. So yeah, I, you know, like that first year was hard because you have all these expectations. And then on top of that, you don't know what to expect. People tell you, but until you do it, you have no idea what the right moves are in that town. And so we just, and I make it sound horrible, but it wasn't, you know, we placed in the first round and that was the only check we won the whole week, but my horse made good runs. It was just everybody else's horse made good runs too. And so it was really tough. And then later in the week, you're just like, oh, why are we not winning? And then you start hitting barrels and then that, you hit one barrel, then you hit two, and then you just went south from there. But I mean, it wasn't, it could have been much worse than, you know, but when you're in the heat of battle, it just feels like the end of the world.
That makes total sense. I mean, it's so much pressure, especially that first year. But so you took a 6 year hiatus and kind of what did that, in a Cliff Notes version, did that 6 years consist of for you?
So got married and had a couple kids, and that takes some time. And then I didn't really have a horse in between that, you know, Sister was the next thing coming up, and she is quite a bit younger than Blue Duck was because there was a big gap between her and him. And so during that time, my dad was just riding her and getting her broke, and I was having babies, and we moved a couple times. So it was, you know, just family stuff going on, basically.
Right.
So when, but I think my dad kind of knew that Sister was, like, he always would talk about her really positive, like, she's going to be good. Like, he kind of knew that, I think, even as a really young horse, so.
Yeah, and so I just because I'm wondering, because I always like to kind of know this for my own personal reasons, like, to circle back to your dad. I always wonder where like the great horsemen and the great horse started. Where was he sourcing horses? I mean, a lot of people look toward to the track and things like that. Like where did he go to kind of prospect horses?
Well, we raised Sister. She's out of the mare that I high school rodeoed on. And he bred that old mare to a Dash to Fame stud just to get more run. Cause like our old mare, she was real quick footed and, she was quick, but she just didn't have that speed that you would want for a barrel horse. And so he thought, well, she's a great horse, but we need more speed.
Right.
So he just, we had a Dash to Fame stud that was close to us, and he was, you know, good, well-built stud, and we bred to him. And so that was when we were getting into, when I was full-fledged barrel racers. So, of course, we were wanting to breed to barrel racing horses at that time.
Who doesn't want to breed to anything Dash to Fame?
Of course, before that, they'd all been just driftwood rope horses that we had around the place that we just made them do whatever we needed to.
Sure.
And so we've always just raised our own as much, I mean, for what we needed. We weren't really in the business of selling or breeding or doing any of that, but just to have horses of our own. So that's how Sister kind of came about. But we did know we needed some more speed for if we were going to do the barrel racing event.
Right. Well, I mean, did it ever pan out in her, right? I mean, man, she's
kind of the best of both worlds. She's got the cow horse, you know, mind on her. And then she's got that extra bit of run that her mom never had. So,
right. So you're having kids, you're doing the family thing, getting married, the important slice of life stuff that you just don't want to miss, and then it's gone. But once you have kids, it kind of changes the whole dynamic of pro rodeo, right?
Oh, for sure. It's a whole different ball game there. And I think Sister was about 7 when I started rodeoing on her. And it's just so funny because when the minute I got on her, she gives you so much confidence. Like, I swung a leg over her and she like already knew what to do. I mean, she's just that confident horse. And so there was never really a doubt in my mind that she was not going to be good. Like, I knew she had it in her. And so I had a 3-year-old and a baby. And I asked my mom to go with me to help me with the kids. And like, looking back now, I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, why would I take my mom and these 2 babies and drive them across the country for, I'm so glad I did, but it was a lot to take on.
Oh man. Like, I mean, so 3 and 1, is that what it was?
Yeah, she wasn't even a year old yet.
Oh my goodness. So just all car seat time, and anybody who has kids knows that just doesn't work.
It was hard, but we did it, and everybody survived. So.
It ended up being better for it, probably. Yeah. But, I mean, when you took Sister to your first NFR, I mean, you probably had a different mindset with her than you did on Blue Duck, right?
Yeah. So going into my first NFR on her, I felt ready. Like, I wanted redemption on that yellow arena. Like, I was determined to make it good. And I knew exactly what I did not want to do from my prior experience. And, you know, she was really fresh. I was really fresh. I mean, I felt like everything was firing on all cylinders. So it was just completely different experience. And with that being said, like, everything went great in 2017. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better one. And even as good as things did go, like, it is a hard week. It's like, even when things are going good, it is hard. And so it's just hard to explain to someone that hasn't been there and done
right,
it.
Right. And I mean, to go from the group of people who are in 2010 and then basically 16 through today, I mean, the competition that you are all up against, I mean, each other, it's unbelievable. I mean, I can't think of a tougher field of, you know, jockeys and barrel horses that are constantly coming back each year. And it's just unreal. The times that are being posted and what you have to do to even place in a round at the NFR and the barrel racing right now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's just gotten faster and faster and faster, it seems like, and just more consistent too. I mean, these horses are just doing good every run. And so it was quite a bit different, I feel like, from when I was riding Blue Duck to where I was riding Sister. I remember coming back that first year and rodeoing on her, thinking like, wow, this is different. Like, this just has a whole different feel to it. And so there's just so many good horses now that it's, you know, it's anybody's ball game, really.
I mean, it is. You can look at 2016, 17, 18, you know, and 19 and see, you know, who did what. I mean, in 2016, you knew what was going to happen, more or less. But in 17, it was tight.
Yeah. And then you have a successful year and then you think, oh, I figured it out. No, the next year it's completely different again. And so you just never know. And I just feel like in 17, I was really ready for it. My horse was really ready for it. And we were both just, everything just went smooth.
Right.
And I don't know how to plan that. Like, I still don't know how it happened or why. It's just everything worked.
Right. It's like if you could bottle that up and just reproduce it,
yeah,
you would, but no one can do that.
Yeah. I mean, I did it and I still don't know how I did it.
Right. Right. And I mean, then you see, you know, you do it once and then you see some people do it twice, but they all have that same answer. It's just like, I don't know what happened. It just worked. And
I wish I did. I wish I knew. But I think sometimes it's just, you know, things are working and you just can't fight it when they are.
Right, right. Which kind of brings us to an interesting point where, you know, you come off 2019, which was a great year for you. It was a great year for, I mean, you look at who was in the top five for the world, and then for the top five, the abs, like, oh my God. Like, to even be in that group is just amazing. But then we come to 2020, and all this stuff is going on that is, I mean, literally devastating some people's lives. And you're from a place where just south of you, like, what, you can't touch dry sand? You know, there's a mayor in LA County who says you can't touch dry sand. It just doesn't even make sense. So, I mean, how have you guys been getting through it and handling it? And what has it been doing to your life personally?
It's tough, you know. It's like I said, when something's not going right, it's like nothing's going right.
Right.
And that's kind of how this year's been, not just for me, but everybody. It's like we're fighting it so hard, and it's like we're not making any headway, it doesn't feel like. So it's hard to keep your head on straight in those situations. Like, I've just been at home and I'm thinking, well, just do what I can. Like, I can't control what's going on. I just have to do what I can control. So we've just been working a lot on ourselves and trying to kind of work on my horses and get them better. And I'm trying to ride better and do what I can to just be ready for whenever it hits.
Right. I mean, what the thing that a lot of people have told me is just that it's the uncertainty that's like, either cancel them all or don't cancel any of them, because you're just waiting almost, it seems like, week by week to try to get an answer.
Yeah, and I know, it is like, I wish there was an answer, but nobody has it. And I understand what people are going through. I don't blame anybody for, you know, not having a rodeo or making a last minute decision, because I get it. It's hard for those committees and everybody to make that call, and they want to have the rodeo, and there's just so many obstacles. I mean, I watched my husband go through it with Red Bluff, because he manages that rodeo, and it's just not simple.
Right.
It's complicated. And so it is what it is right now, is all I know how to say it, because it is not simple. So
no, it isn't. And it's funny, because people want to look at the committees and point fingers at the committees as if they're the one making the decisions. And even the PRCA, I mean, it's everybody is at the mercy of kind of a higher power, you know, whether that be the government or just circumstance. And there's just no way to answer those questions. And you have an interesting insight because your husband is on a committee.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, the frustrating part is we're at someone else's mercy and nobody likes that.
No.
We all want to be able to make our own decisions and do what we want to do. And I think that's the frustrating part for most everybody is that people are telling us we can't and are telling us how we can't. And so I think that's just ultimately the most frustrating part is, you know, I have a healthy horse. I feel good. We're ready to go and we can't.
Right.
So, and I know the committee's there ready to go. They want to have their rodeo. They don't want to cancel for a multitude of reasons and they can't. And so I think everybody just feels kind of helpless right now.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not? I mean, this is how you guys make your livings, and to not be able to make your livings, it's just, and a lot of people in the country are feeling that, you know, not being able to go to work or whatever it may be, or God forbid you're one of the 30 million people plus who has completely lost your job.
Yeah.
You know, but for something like rodeo, like, well, the Cheyenne Frontier Days has never been shut down. What do they say? 124 years without missing a Cheyenne Frontier Days?
Yeah. I mean,
unbelievable.
It makes me sad because, and I really hope that it is kind of eye-opening for everyone because I don't ever want to see the day there's not going to be a rodeo. Like, it's really sad right now to me that there's no rodeos going on. There's so much history, so much of our American culture tied up in rodeos. And I don't think people were kind of letting that slip away. And I hope this kind of is an eye opener to like try harder to like keep those rodeos going, keep everyone out there, keep that history and that culture alive.
Absolutely. And we're in kind of the peak time to be able to do that because everybody can sit back, reevaluate, look at ways they can improve the sport overall. And we're lucky in 2020 with the technologies we've got and things like the Cowboy Channel and even this, just to be able to bring more shine on the sport of rodeo, modernize the sport of rodeo. I mean, it's interesting kind of seeing the changing of the guard with the mentalities and the way that everybody's really, I mean, you guys are athletes now. You know, it's not cowboy or cowgirl. That's always there. That's always going to be there, right? It's always going to be that. But it's a serious athletic pursuit. It's a sport. And we're in the best time for it. And so for to not be able to do it and keep it going, it's just like anybody who loves this, grew up in it, even fans of it, it is the biggest gut punch in the world to not be able to do anything.
Yes, I agree. And my fear is that we're going to lose some next year because they won't be able to survive this. And so I hope we can really come together and just save it for next year and save it forever. Cause this is just kind of depressing for everyone, I think.
Oh, absolutely. With you being in California, like is one of your kids in school, both or?
I have one.
One in school?
Yeah, she's in second grade.
When did they shut that down where you guys are at?
So they canceled Houston, I guess, the beginning of March, and I just went home from Texas to California. And right, it was California shut down pretty early, I feel like, from the rest of the country. It was right when I got home, they kind of decided no school and everything was shut down. So it was pretty fast. So we've been shut down for quite a while and we're getting going again now, but, it's been a while.
Right. And where you guys are at, I mean, you're probably thanking your lucky stars you're in a rural area, but I mean, is the mayor of like your town and all that, are they pretty like pro get everything going again or are they teetering on kind of what everybody else in California is doing?
It's hard to know. I think there's a little bit of both. I think people, the sheriffs, different sheriffs around the state really have been pretty supportive about getting things back going. And yeah, I think everybody wants to see it go. I think the disagreement comes with how and when. And so we're, you know, my life really didn't change that much other than not being able to go to a rodeo. But like, as far as being home and doing stuff around my hometown, like it was fairly normal for us. We went to the store and just made sure to wash our hands a lot more.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like, okay. I mean, we're either going to die or we're fine. So let's just wash our hands.
Yeah. And you know, I'm pretty laid back. I don't get too worked up about stuff in general, but, you know, I just take my vitamins, wash my hands, and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I mean, minus the vitamins. Usually it's the Copenhagen with cowboys, but not so much anymore. But, I mean, that's like the cowboy way or cowgirl way, whatever you want to say. It's like just kind of roll with it. Yeah.
For sure. I think to rodeo, you kind of have to be that way a little bit. And I've always been that way. So I'm not too stirred up about it, but you know, it's affecting a lot of people in a multitude of ways. So there's different views to everything.
Right. Totally. And you know, it's interesting because the Cave Creek Rodeo, I mean, that's never been like a destination rodeo. And to have them come back and be kind of the first one back, I mean, was it a tough decision to go there, or were you just like, we're going?
Well, this year I have zero money won. So I'm kind of starting with a blank slate, and I figured I need to go, and I want to support them if they're going to go to the effort to do that. I mean, it was not easy for them to do that. And so I wanted to be there for them and for me. But I thought about it a little bit, but I just decided I was going to go.
Right. Right, and then it just kind of the natural progression to come to Fort Worth to finish out the whole Houston thing.
Yeah, it did end up being pretty good that way. You know, they decided to do this Houston deal and thought, well, I'm halfway there anyway, so I might as well just keep going.
Right. And
who knows what the year's going to end up like. I don't want to miss some sort of opportunity there.
Totally.
So.
Yeah, and with... I mean, I guess I just saw something that maybe it was Cody, Wyoming, that's going to do something. I'm not sure. Somebody sent me something. I just don't remember exactly which. Can you look that up, Ty? Okay. Yeah. And he'll find it slowly. The funny thing about Ty is he's got like, we had to spell the word rodeo for him when we brought him in. It's like, no, it's with an R, son. But so he does it. He's learning the more episodes we do. Yeah. Cody Stampede.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track and about what state's doing what and all the guidelines, and you know, I'm just waiting for him to go, and then I'll be there.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, you've kind of made up your mind. Like, if they open up a rodeo, you're probably going to just go for it.
Yeah. I mean, within reason.
Sure.
I have no clue. You know, I don't think anybody does.
Right.
And right now we're just kind of in limbo. So we're just going to have to play it by ear.
And so you guys will go from Fort Worth all the way back to Cottonwood. And then what do you guys do out there? I mean, is that close? Cause you'd have to point it out on the map. Cause I just don't know. It's like, you only look at certain places. Right. And so like, are you close to the beach? Do you get to do that?
So we're right between Redding and Red Bluff.
Okay.
So rodeo wise,
sure.
Those two rodeos,
that helps.
We're right in between, and we actually made national news for having the Cottonwood Mother's Day Rodeo this year against everybody's guidelines. And so, we're on the map for that, but we're right in the valley. So takes about 4 hours to get to the coast, and it's a cold coast where we're at, and it gets pretty hot. So when we get home, it's probably going to be about 105.
Oh, geez. So you guys are going to be warmer than we are here.
Yeah, without the humidity, though.
Right. So. Well, that's what's killer here, because I'm from Colorado. When I moved here, it's like starting like April-ish. I don't wear jeans and cowboy boots if I absolutely don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so brutal here.
It kills us. That's why we came a little bit early, because I was anticipating that humidity. Mm-hmm. It always takes me a few days to like get used to that.
You got so lucky with because it was, it's going to be bad next week.
Yeah.
And you guys will be long gone.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of like a tide. I mean, you're born here. It's like a late start for the weather here, right?
This is pretty late, but also you don't get used to Texas weather. I've lived here for 22 years, all my life, still ain't used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine, like, living in Houston? That got to be one of the worst places in the world.
It's humid in March when we're down there. I remember being in my trailer with the windows and doors open and the air conditioner on, because I didn't know how to make it comfortable in there. It was just so weird. It's weird weather.
Yeah, there's only so much a rooftop AC on a living quarters can handle.
Yeah.
It's just when it's really hot, they just do not work that good.
Yeah. It gets pretty steamy, so.
It's no doubt about it. So, I mean, we're kind of at the tail end of all this, and of course the country is like in disarray. It's like you see all those things like here comes the murder hornets and now here's the riots, like we're in the apocalypse. No rodeos, that's our apocalypse. But yeah. I mean, God, you just got to hope that things calm down and we can get back to normal. But I mean, in a best case scenario, I mean, I don't know if they're going to have an NFR, but I mean, if you could write the rule book, would you say let's get this going right now? And like you would try to make the NFR with what you've got as far as rodeo. I mean, nobody has rodeo counts, let's be real, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know the right moves, and I think that's the problem. Nobody knows the right moves to make. And you know, there's just not going to be enough to rodeos to do it, I don't think. But then it's, you know, we're just waiting for it. And with Cheyenne and all those Wyoming rodeos that just canceled, I mean, there's not much left after that, because all of the Northwest rodeos have pretty much canceled from what I can see. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like. So kind of just a sad year.
It's just put me to sleep for all of 2020 and just let's see what happens next year.
I think everybody needs to get through it and just hope for 2021 to be normal. 'Cause at this point, it's just not looking that good for the rest of the season.
Like for nothing.
Yeah.
It's like we didn't go to the grocery store now.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, it's been really nice having you here, Nelly. And, you know, you were so worried that we wouldn't be able to hear you, but you're not that quiet.
Oh, well,
turns out.
Good.
I don't know if it's because Ty has the volume up really high or you're trying really hard, but I think you speak very eloquently.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. That's all I ever heard growing up was speak up. Speak up.
You in the back. What's your name? Nelly. We can't hear you.
Yeah.
Say your president's.
Exactly.
Is that what school is like for you? Like,
yeah.
What's that girl over there who whispers all the time?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. That and you need to be more aggressive. So.
Yeah, I bet your horse would disagree. She probably likes how non-aggressive you are.
Yeah. See, hopefully.
We see the aggressive people and sometimes it doesn't go so well for them. Yeah. So I think you probably chose the right career to be a soft-spoken and, when you watch you ride, a soft-handed person.
Yeah.
So kudos on that.
It seems to be fitting pretty well, so.
I think so, yeah. If you have a gold buckle, I think everybody probably better listen to what you're saying and doing and take some notes. Well, so great to have you here.
Thank you. Whoa, brother,
let's go down. This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Casey Burke. Our theme song is by Shay Ashshire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you guys next time.